Welcome to the Nation Magazine Podcasts. You're listening to Nation Conversations, exclusive audio of Nation forums, events, seminars, and salons.
I'm Emily Douglas, web editor at The Nation, and I'm here with Sarah Seltzer, who has recently published a piece on thenation.com entitled, Where Are the Women at Occupy Wall Street? Everywhere, and they're not going away. Sarah, thank you for coming in this morning to discuss the piece.
Thanks for having me in, Emily.
So we asked you to answer this question. Are there women activists deeply involved in the day-to-day life at Zuccotti Park? And if there are, how do they feel about their being a woman in the movement? Do they feel that their contributions are recognized? Are they able to participate in a range of activities, not limited to stereotypically feminine roles like food prep or the comfort station? Are they confronted by a lot of sexist behavior? How did you go about finding an answer to that question?
Well, the main thing I did was a series of very in-depth interviews with women who are involved in the different working groups down at Occupy Wall Street. So some of them were in the labor outreach working group, some were in the media outreach working group, some of them did direct action, a lot of them were involved in the people of color working group. But I also went down to Zuccotti Park. I observed the working groups in action. They all meet in this quiet, peaceful atrium on, I think it's 60 Wall Street, and they sit in circles and do their work there. I went to some general assemblies to see how their decision-making process works and whether it's inclusive. And I just walked around Zuccotti Park to see whether the sort of sidewalk democracy there, the conversations that are happening, the kitchen, the comfort working group, to see, you know, where the women were down there as well. So that was sort of the variety of methods I used to answer this question.
So, and one thing your piece shows is that, yes, you know, as you're describing, there are many women involved in Occupy Wall Street. You found many of them involved in working groups and general assemblies and just sort of all around the park. And they, you know, you heard some stories of some outbursts of sexist behavior. Some signs used terms like rape or whore as a metaphor. There was a woman who told the story of being hugged without her consent. Or early on, there was a serial groper at Zuccotti Park. But the women you spoke with seem to have a sense of solidarity with each other and with some allies that enables them to stay involved even when they encounter this sexism or just cluelessness.
Right, and I think that the fact that the movement is so open and so big sort of works both ways. I mean, that's how you get people like the serial groper down there, because anyone can go down and join, but it also enables people to find their people within the movement, their allies. There are a number of smaller caucuses and working groups for like-minded individuals where people can really go and kind of gather strength. And a lot of the women I spoke to said that, you know, when they feel frustrated within the larger group, there are these smaller groups and smaller friendships and relationships they've forged with like-minded people, not just necessarily other women, but people who think the way they do and who are concerned about misogyny and concerned about racism, and they can get together and, you know, share their experiences and then go back to the general assemblies or the working groups and really continue to fight to have, not only on behalf of the movement, but to have their voices heard within the movement.
Mm-hmm. And you emphasize in the piece that leaderlessness, it's an officially leaderless movement, is not the same thing as structurelessness. Can you talk a bit about the structures of facilitation and consensus and use at Occupy Wall Street and how they are able to elevate voices that might traditionally be marginalized?
Yes. So the General Assembly is the meeting that happens every night at 7 in Zuccotti Park, and there's now also one in Washington Square Park. And it's been structured in a very careful way, and I believe it's been tweaked repeatedly to deal with problems as they come up, so that it's not dominated by the same voices over and over again, or the same type of voices over and over again. So there's a facilitation team that rotates for every single meeting, and very often they have a new facilitation training so that anyone who wants to facilitate can do that. So they make sure that there, first of all, there's diversity in the facilitation team, and it's not the same people running meetings. Second of all, they have a structure called progressive stack. So after a proposal is given to the General Assembly, it's opened for clarifying questions, concerns, comments. There are specific times for all those different kinds of responses. Progressive stack means that the one person who's in charge of sort of forming a line, a queue for people who have comments, is constantly on the lookout to make sure that new voices get to the front of the line and that voices from marginalized groups, so women, queer people, people of color, people with disabilities, people who haven't been heard before, get to the front. Because so often that means sometimes that a white male activist at Occupy Wall Street may have to wait a long time, particularly if he's been very involved in General Assemblies before. But it also means that there's a structure in place to make sure that there's a diversity of voices at these meetings, and they're not taken over by the people with the loudest voices.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that in action, and it really is pretty cool when you see the progressive stack happening. One thing that you did uncover, though, is you spoke to some women who said that while anyone can speak at a General Assembly, it might be harder for someone who feels like they are speaking on behalf of their race or class or gender, or might just not have a lot of experience speaking publicly in front of literally hundreds of people, which is, the audience at a General Assembly.
That's right. It's a huge audience. There's pressure. There's time pressure because these meetings do go for a very long time. It's cold out. So if there's a concern that something that's being brought up is problematic because of racial or gender content that some people don't understand, it can be very hard. It can be very hard. And the people that I spoke to who have done this, it can be very hard to get up and explain privilege or historical oppression or intersection mm-hmm. of oppressions or some of these very sort of complicated and personally painful ideas in front of these hundreds of people who want to get the proposal voted on and go home. But at the same time, it's this opportunity to really educate on the ground as they're going. So there's one of the people I interviewed said it cuts both ways, basically.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things you report on is that there are a few reforms that might be adopted by the movement that would enable working groups to work more efficiently. They wouldn't have to, as I understand it, they wouldn't have to bring all proposals through General Assembly meetings. Did the women you spoke with, what do they think the effect of these reforms would be? And can you outline them a little bit for us?
The reform, which actually has passed now, is called a Spokes Council, which is another, like the General Assembly, it's another sort of old-time anarchist form of horizontal leaderlessness decision-making. So each working group, or each group of working groups, will choose one spoke, which is like a spoke on a wheel, not just a spokesperson, but also a spoke on the wheel, to represent them at a spokes council. And they'll all sit behind that person as the different spokes make financial and logistical decisions for the working groups. So, for instance, if the people of color working group wants to do something on Veterans Day, say, and they need a budget for it, that would go through the Spokes Council instead of the General Assembly. Now, the reason they're called spokes is because they change at every meeting. So this person who's representing their group is not going to be always representing them. And they're also not empowered to say any more than their group has decided beforehand. Mm-hmm. So they're only speaking on behalf of their group. They're not able to make decisions for their group. In addition to the working groups, traditionally marginalized groups can form caucuses and also have a spoke at the Spokes Council. And the people who are camping at Sukkoti also have a spoke. So that the idea is to try and get everyone involved and give everyone a voice. So the women I spoke to were, as the proposal was being worked through, they said some people had some specific concerns, but on the whole, I think they felt that it was good to be getting towards a more efficient model for the working groups, that a lot of the on-the-ground logistical work that was happening through the working groups, and they felt the General Assembly was extremely important for energy and things like that, and for the sense of direct democracy, but they also, I think, were ready to move forward with this for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just to return for a second to your reporting, did you meet anyone who really confounded your growing sense that women were heavily involved, key players in Occupy Wall Street? Is there anyone who you feel like was sort of left out of the story?
Well, I think anyone who came down to get involved and was turned off and left was left out, because the focus of the story was women who are actively involved and who, want to stay actively involved. Within the women I interviewed, there was a huge variety of responses in terms of the misogyny. I mean, some people said that, it's straight up misogynist. Others said this isn't a big problem. My problem isn't with my comrades. My problem is with the outside world. So certainly what people had observed within the movement was very varied, which means obviously that there are probably many women who have come down and felt that they can't be involved. And, you know, one of the big problems that a number of women said to me was that they felt that the media was representing the movement to be more male than it was, specifically to be more white male, and they were already elevating certain white male voices, mm-hmm. which is what the movement is trying so hard not to do, and that they're worried that women watching on TV will think that there isn't a place for them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that they want, in order to combat, you know, these problems, they want more women to come down and join them and help them make it a more ideal society and mm-hmm. a model society.
Mm-hmm. There's a very poignant quotation from a young woman, I think you described, who says, if you're a woman, I say, come down to Occupy Wall Street.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for coming into the office to talk to us. And readers, please be sure to check out Sarah's piece on our website.
Nation Conversations is a product of The Nation magazine and is available on iTunes. You can hear more podcasts at thenation.com/audio. Thanks for listening.